milk today. My love has gone away. The bottle stands forlorn, a symbol of the dawn. No milk today. It seems a common sight, but people passing by don't know the reason why. How could they know just what this message means? The end of my hopes, the end of all my dreams. How could they know the palace that had been behind the door where my love reigned as queen?
Back on Downtown 4:30 on a Monday afternoon. And time for us to welcome in our friend Larry Mahoney of the Bangor Daily News. Hi, Larry.
Richard, that's a classic. No milk today. You're one of the few people that has ever played it. I don't know why people ignore that song. I mean,
I think it's the best song they did.
I do too. It's just, you know, I mean, even the words, no milk today, my lover's gone away, the bottle stands forlorn, a symbol of the dawn. You know, just, you're really clever, clever. I haven't checked it. I don't know. I don't think it even charted.
I think it made the top 40, but just barely. But you know, when we had Peter Noon on a few years ago, I talked about my love for the song, and he said it was one of his favorite songs that they recorded, written by the great Graham Goldman, who wrote Bus Stop and a million other hit songs.
Classic. Mm. A great one. Bus Stop is a classic. Great words to that too. I mean, Beach and Bus, but yeah, that's a classic by the Hollies.
No Milk Today went to number 35 on the Billboard charts.
Okay, well, I'm glad Peter Noon said that because and he played here a long time ago. He played at the casino, and,
right?
He's got a show on Sirius Radio, and his daughter has a show on also.
Yeah, and his show is really, really good, and he's a great guy. He told us one of my favorite stories about how they celebrated when they found out that they had a top 10 hit in America with I'm Into Something Good. And
there
was this abandoned factory across the street. They were playing in a little club restaurant, and they got the word that the song had made the top 10. And he said, as only boys like us could do, and I think he was only about 15 or 16 at the time, they threw a bunch of potatoes and broke windows in this abandoned factory across the street. That was their celebration.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That's like one of my favorite songs. I'm gonna play it after we get off here. Remember John Hiatt did a song, Perfectly Good Guitar?
Yes.
Yeah, where he just dumps on people for breaking their equipment. He said, why did they break that perfectly good guitar? You know, obviously in reference to The Who and how they made a name for them smashing their equipment, which I never understood. You know, there are some things that just that goes over the line as far as I'm concerned. But I love that song John Hiatt wrote, really clever. Peter New must have been interesting because the stories he tells. I mean, he seems like an intriguing and a pretty laid back guy that loves entertaining.
Absolutely, it's still out there. I mean, he must be. That'd be in his late 70s now, but still out there doing shows. And yeah, he was an actor. He was a child actor before he became a successful singer as well.
Yeah. He, a lot of these guys really have varied backgrounds. And they were either born into theatrical families or they found a passion for it. And, look at all. I mean, you know, the Kinks are Ray and Dave Davies, you know, brothers, a lot of brothers, of course, the Black Crowes, the Robinsons, who apparently were not the best of friends, even though they were brothers, but I guess they got it patched up because of their sons, their kids. They felt that it was wrong for them to have this hate on toward each other because, you know, that deprived their children or got in the way of the relationship that their children had with each other. So they patch things up, but the Flock of Seagulls, two brothers, I mean, there's so many brother acts.
Oasis, the Everly Brothers, and they hated each other.
It's funny how some of them did, and probably the worst one, which saw him in concert, he was terrific, is the falling out between the Fogerty Brothers with Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Right. They, none of them got along through the years. We've had a couple of them. We've had the non-Fogertys on the show, Stu Cook and Cosmo Clifford.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that got nasty with the, And now the latest one, that our brothers, which you never thought, is Hall & Oates. They're in litigation.
Yeah, but apparently, now I've read a couple interviews, I think one with each of them, and it seems like this is a business thing, by and large.
Not a personal thing.
Yeah. No, and I know Daryl said, look, John is a huge part of my life and part of my story, and yeah, I don't know that we'll ever play together again, but I have great respect for him and his talents,
Daryl,
I think
you must have had him on the show.
We've had John on, but we've never
Jittery, right for a while.
I think he does. We've never had Daryl, but we've had John.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
But interesting.
Yeah,
interesting.
Have a TV show he based out of his place in Kittery. He'd have I think he had Booker T. And Booker T there.
Oh, he's still doing it. He's
jammed.
He's back with more of Live from Daryl's House.
Okay.
Matter of fact, we just had Howard Jones on the show a couple of weeks ago, who is out on tour, going on tour next week with Daryl Hall. And he said they had never met throughout the 80s and 90s, but they met when he was doing an episode of Live from Daryl's House.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Howard Jones has been around a long time.
He sure has 40 years making hits now.
Wow.
Well, let's talk a little sports, although the music is always fun.
Do that too.
Man, what a weekend for the Maine Black Bear hockey team, going on the road, getting a win and a tie and a shootout victory as well.
Yeah, it really was. And, again, they keep checking the boxes as far as accomplishments. I mean, they hadn't won at Northeastern since February 25th, 2012. 14 consecutive losses that were preceded by two ties, so a 16-game winless streak. And they were able to go down there and get the job done. And, they get balanced scoring, to carve out the win. Albin Boya bounced back from a subpar performance against Quinnipiac and was outstanding in goal. They were down 2-0 in the second game, trailing 1-0, 2-0 going in the third, and they came back to tie and get a precious point or a precious tie in the pairwise. And then they after the overtime, if it's still tied, they go to a shootout. And all that is, that doesn't mean anything to the NCAA. All it means is they get an extra point in the hockey standings, which could loom large. I mean, a point could mean the difference between hosting and going on the road in the playoffs. So, yeah, I mean, they get it done. They got a big stretch coming up, two with Merrimack at home, two at BC, number two in the country, and then two at home with BU, ranked third in the country. So, I mean, a big six-game stretch here coming up the next three weekends. But, they're just getting it done. They believe in themselves. They've reached a point, Rich, where they've gone from hoping to win to expecting to win. They don't get outworked. Ben Barr didn't think it was didn't think they played that well on Friday night. Turned the puck over too much. Didn't land enough hits in the neutral zone. Better Saturday, but again, he's a perfectionist, and they're held accountable. Their practices are videotaped, and they sit down with players and point out their strengths and weaknesses. That's why a team with one draft pick, and that being a seventh round pick, Taylor McCarr, can compete against teams with 12, 13 draft picks.
Well, they're number seven in the country this week. They dropped it from 6 to 7 despite the win and the tie. But as you said, a tough stretch of games over these next few weeks. And really, again, challenging themselves with the non-conference schedule. Early January, they'll take on the number one team in the country, Denver.
Yeah, Denver's on cruise control. They're 6-0, playing very, very well. They come in here the first week of January. So that's going to be wild. They won the national championship last year and 3 years ago. I mean, they're the model for excellence right now in college hockey, and that's going to be a terrific series. Then Maine will go out there next year and play a two-game set, and that's good to see too, because it's good to see Maine playing some of these teams. Ben Barr will not play anybody if they won't go home and home. He's not going to take his team out to play Michigan or some place like that if they aren't willing to come back here. And I think that's smart. I mean, you need to develop relationships. They've got a real good one established by Red Jenner and Rand Pecknold at Quinnipiac. So they play each other twice, and they both consider it very valuable. I talked to Rand Pecknold about that when he was up here, and they really, it's just a good early season test, knowing that you're going to play a quality team. And of course, that Maine was a quality team last year, and on the road to being another real quality team this year, hopefully going a little further this year than they did a year ago. And those are good because you want to be tested early in the season. It gives you a magnifying glass. You can take a look at your team and say, okay, what do we need to work on? Where were we good? Where aren't we good? And what do we need to work on prior to playing the Hockey East games?
We're talking with Larry Mahoney here on Downtown Maine Football. We talked with Coach Jordan Stevens right before you. Black Bears with a tough one on the road, a place where Maine used to always win. But this Rhode Island team is for real, 7-1 overall right now, first place in the conference. And Maine had some opportunities, but especially on the road, you've got to make the big play when you have the opportunity.
Well, and you and I talked about this, Rich, off mic, and that just I really felt They go down, take a 7-0 lead, and then they're marching again and making it look relatively easy. And they're at the 29-yard line, is 3rd-and-1. They have two cracks on 3rd-and-1, 3rd-and-1 and 4th-and-1, and they can't convert. I believe that was a huge turning point in that game, because I think if they go down, I don't think they would have had to settle for a field goal the way they were moving the ball. I think they would have gone in and taken it in. And being up 14-0 now, Rhode Island is reeling, and now Maine's playing with more confidence. And when they couldn't make it, and they turned it over, and then they took a 15-yard penalty, and then Rhode Island came down and tied it. That just changed. I mean, to me, that's a 14-point swing. And I think you make a great point. Those are things you can't do on the road. You just can't do those things on the road. You have to play, a more perfect game on the road than you do at home. At home, you get the home field and you get the crowd, but, you got to convert there. And I, for the life of me, I don't understand why people don't use that quarterback sneak. I mean, the Philadelphia Eagles, it's called a tush push or the brotherly shove.
Right.
And they've converted over, I think, 60 of 67 the last 2 years, where you put a bulky offensive lineman or fullback in behind the quarterback, and you just push him, and just get pushed. But here's another thing, and hopefully, I would love to see them do this. Here's something I guarantee you would work. Okay, so you're 4th-and-1, Rich. Okay, it doesn't matter. You can have PV in there. You can have a running back like Jahari Martin in the Wildcat. You line up in the Wildcat like you're going to take a snap, in the shotgun position or the Wildcat position. You send a wide receiver in motion. As he's in motion, the quarterback goes up to the line of scrimmage, runs up to the line of scrimmage, and puts his hands under the center, and then shouts go. I guarantee you, 70% of the time, the defense will jump offside. Because there's all this motion going on,
right,
but Rich, as you know, you'd have to practice that about 40 times to make sure your guys didn't jump first.
Right. I don't know what happened to the quarterback sneak, because it's not just Maine.
Know.
You don't see it much anywhere, certainly not in college football.
No, or the remember Sam Cunningham going up over the pile. Leaping up over the pile.
Well, geez, Tom Brady was 45 years old, and he was still converting quarterback sneaks.
I don't understand it. And here's the other thing, because we've talked about this before, is that you got a yard. It's crucial. You got a yard. You may even have less than a yard. The guy who's getting the ball is 6 yards deep.
Yeah.
He's got to run 7 yards to get 1 yard.
Yeah, it's why I'm not a coach, I guess. But it from our perspective and from yours too, it seems. Well, you want to be as close to that yard you need as possible, and that means quarterback under center, everybody packed up there tight on the line,
and guys
to push your man forward as much as you can.
Exactly. Here's the other thing too, Rich. I'm listening to the game with you and Bob. They were getting a lot of pressure on PV.
Yes.
Did they try a screen pass?
I think they tried a bubble screen once. They didn't try a draw. No, okay. No. And there were times when it looked like it was there because you got to do something when they're coming that fast and furious, mostly off the backside, too. And I think, you know, Carter Peavy, and look, this happens with quarterbacks. There were two or three times when I think he could have maybe run and maybe not get a first down, but get 4 or 5 yards or just thrown it away. But you know how quarterbacks think. They feel like they can escape and find a way to make the big play. But, you know, not everybody's going to come up with a Jaden Daniels-like play.
No, and the thing I've never understood is and I understand they're under pressure and sometimes on the backside they don't see it, but especially if you're in field goal position, you can't take a sack.
Right.
And I don't think that really happened. I don't know if that happened with Maine.
No,
we can't.
No.
But that's one thing. It's always look. You know, you got a good field goal kicker. If you feel any pressure, throw it out of bounds and take the 3 points. Take the 3 points. Be happy with that. If you get sacked, you're out of field goal range.
We are seeing a record-setting season potentially from Carter Peavy. He went 29 for 39 and has now completed 70% of his passes, and that is that's well above the all-time Maine record for highest completion percentage in a season set by Marcus Wasileski back in 2013.
Yeah, and the thing about it too, and he's got a relatively inexperienced offensive line in front of him, right? I mean, he's got sophomores and juniors who've had maybe 1 year as starters. So, I mean, he's been under pressure, but I mean, he's really, I don't know. I'm not sure if Derek Robertson would be 4-4 with this team.
I don't think so. No. I like Derek. He's a great young man, obviously a terrific quarterback. He put up a lot of yards, but it didn't translate to wins. And we're seeing it. We saw it over the weekend in the Monmouth game against Towson. He threw for 300 yards, but they only scored 14 points.
Yeah. And he's not mobile. He's not mobile. And PV, you know, has again extended drives and extended plays with his legs and he's very smart too. I mean, he does. This was a tough one just because this is such a winnable game, and if they've been able to, you know, even that first, you know, when we talked about not converting in the first half, I mean, it's 14-14 with 13 minutes left, and so they're making some serious progress this year, but they're not quite there because that's a situation right there, Rich. You've got to get a stop. They had 35 on that drive. Okay, and they picked up 7. And then the 46-yard pass, and then they're in the end zone. Then now you're down by 21-14. Next drive, I think you got sacked twice.
Yeah, and that's where if you give up the touchdown, you've got to bounce right back and march down the field and get 7 of your own.
With the progression, those are games that they will eventually win if they continue to progressing.
Right.
Because those are, you know, and Jordan summed it up well. It came down to like 5 or 6 plays, and they didn't make them, and Rhode Island did. Yeah. You know, Rhode Island seemed to, and he had a great line. I don't know if you heard the press conference today, but he said, I never thought of this, but it makes a good point. They were like, 9 for 17 on third downs?
Yes.
But you know what he said? I never thought of this. He said, we shouldn't have 17 third down plays.
Well, and I want to look at my drive chart before the Oklahoma game this week and break it down. Bob and I were talking about it on the ride home because it just felt as the game went on. I haven't looked at the numbers to check it out, but I felt like they were really bad on second down because so many of those third downs were 3rd and 9, 3rd and 10, 3rd and 12, 3rd and 15, and that got them in a hole.
That's what he said on the conference call. He said, you know, we've got to be able to pick up first downs on second down or first down. You know, not always get the third down. And again, a lot of it, as you just alluded to, comes down to what you get on first and second down. If you're 3rd and 3, okay, you've done you put yourself in decent position.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're 3rd and 6, 3rd and 8, 3rd and 10, 3rd and 12, which they were a lot of the time. That's tough, and they still converted what over half.
Yeah,
but still, I mean, when you have 17 third down plays, that means you're leaving it late as far as in your drive. I mean, you'd like to just get some easy, move the chains easily with like a 12-yard pickup on first down or a 9-yard pickup on second down after picking up three or four on first. You can't put yourself in third and long and expect to bail yourself out all the time because, you know, the other team, especially Rhode Island, is good. But it's a winnable game. It really, you know, that's the frustrating part because they're, you know, you look at some of the games they've played, and again, this is one that, Monmouth game just got away early, and they were never really in that, you know, after, you know, Derek Robertson just, you know, tore them apart. But you know, that game was one that that Rhode Island game, because if they win it, I think they're very much alive in the playoff.
I think so too, because I think they can win the next three conference games after Oklahoma.
Yes, yeah, I do too. But it's funny, on the conference call today, he sort of sighed. I asked him that question, he kind of sidestepped that. He said he doesn't like having three games lumped together.
Right.
he doesn't like the narrative. You know, it's one of these one game at a time.
Oh, sure.
In Oklahoma now, and I think what he meant is, I think people are expecting him to win those three games. And aren't really and don't care aren't looking at each game at a time. They're saying, well, they certainly can beat Bryant and Elon and New Hampshire. You know, again, they just got beat by Villanova, so they're not going anywhere. So they got them at home. So he made the right point, Rich. He said, look, every game's a tough game, and it is in the CAA, and so. I think he's hearing that, and the players are hearing that. Hey, no problem, guys. Okay, go compete at Oklahoma, see what you can do, and then win your last three, and we're happy. And we expect you to just breeze through the last three, and that's not going to happen. I mean, they're capable of winning all three, but you're not just going to go out and put on your pads and leave the field with a win. You're going to have to play well.
Well, yeah, because there are no guaranteed wins in the CAA. Ask William and Mary, who lost to a Stony Brook team that didn't win a game a year ago, and I think is now sitting at 6-2.
Yeah, good for them. Good for their turnaround. I'm happy for them, and you like to see teams emerge, teams that have been, subsequently, look at Albany. I mean, Albany was in the FCS semifinals last year, and they're struggling.
Larry Mahoney, Bangor Daily News. Larry, great talking with you as always. Thanks for being with us this afternoon, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks and do it all again. We'll come up with some good music between now and then.
Oh, we have to. I'll get to work on that, my brother. we'll rock it out.
That's planned. Thanks, Larry.
Thanks, Rich.
Larry Mahoney, Bangor Daily News, with us here on Downtown. We'll